Hi guys and girls, I've got John McGrath today. No need to give you a big introduction. The owner of probably the best real estate office in Australia, the one that we're actually filming at the moment at Edgecliff. Welcome, John.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
John, we're going to go straight into it. I want to ask you, you've employed hundreds of agents over the years, good ones, bad ones, some of them long-term, sustainable, and they're doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at someone like Ben Collier, been around for ages. You've got some newer ones that are doing well. I'd love to know, have you been able to work out a common theme of the great ones, the ones that write the numbers? Because some are guys, some are girls, some are old, young. Is there a common theme?
I think there's probably half a dozen or so traits. I mean, first one I come across is energy. Generally, successful salespeople in any industry, not just real estate, they've got a good energy. They're excited, they're enthusiastic, they're passionate. And that in itself attracts business. People want to do business with someone that's enthusiastic. So energy is one. Persistence is critical too, because good energy is great while things are going well, but not everything goes well all the time. So you've got to be able to weather the storm and have some disappointments and accept some rejection and then just keep going on with the same level of enthusiasm. Three is product knowledge, or what we now call hyperlocal knowledge. So you've got to know your stuff. I mean, real estate is not that intricate, but you need to know about marketing, you need to know about listing presentation, you need to know values in an area. So you've got to be a technician. So you need excitement, enthusiasm, persistence and resilience. You've got to have local knowledge, product knowledge, you've got to know your stuff. And then the last one, probably the most important in some ways, is your ability to connect with people. So people say, well, you come and interview this person, tell me what you think. I say, yeah, but give me only 5 minutes. They say, well, you know, they've got a long CV. I say, within 5 minutes, if I don't feel excited about employing this person, that's probably all I need to know. So, you know, I just came from a chat with someone before. Within 3 minutes of meeting the person, I knew I wanted to hire him. And that's all I needed. I didn't need to see his CV. I just needed to know, you know, what is he like when he's engaging with me and how did I feel? And I wanted to hire him after like 2 or 3 minutes. So I think it's about energy and how do you feel and can they connect? Are they interesting people? Are they aligned with their true self or are they inauthentic? Because, of course, you could be an inauthentic high-energy salesman, but you pick up on that. So I think they're probably the traits. You're right, it's got nothing to do with gender, age, background, education, none of the above, because we've had some of the best sales agents that have had poor or no education almost, and we've had highly educated people with MBAs and all sorts of letters after their name that just haven't been able to deal with the rigors of real estate. So it's more about those traits.
Okay. So by the sounds of it, you'd hire more for attitude and less for skill?
Correct.
Yeah. Do you think real estate agents that are really good are born or made, or do you think it's a combination?
I'd say it's 80% made. There's no doubt that some people seem to have a better propensity or gift to be able to connect with people. You know, there's some people that feel like they're almost made for sales. But there's a lot of other people that I've met, and some of them work here and some of them don't. I look at Michael Pallier, who was Rain and Horn, I think now, Sotheby's, and one of the great agents in Australia. I mean, I knew Michael when he was a Rolls-Royce mechanic because I used to work in Toyota as a trainee car salesman, so I sort of knew that industry. And Michael certainly was not gifted with any particular sales talents. He worked and worked and worked, and he crafted himself, and he built up a great sales persona. And now he's one of the highest paid, most successful agents in the country. And he, I think, is a classic example that really wasn't what you'd call a natural-born salesman. On the other hand, you've got people like James Dack. James has worked here for 20 years. James has got great charisma, and he probably had a good, healthy head start in being born with that, but he had to do a lot of work along the way also to develop his career. So I think even if you have a natural bent towards sales and connecting with people, you've still got to put in the hard yards. If you don't have that natural bent, you can learn it. And, you know, I think I'm probably more towards I didn't have the skill, but I learnt it. I learned it hard. I mean, I do auctions, as you know. I used to do auctions, and I enjoy doing public speaking. I was petrified of all of that when I started. No good at public speaking, no good at auctioneering, but I just worked and worked and worked and worked till I got to a point where I was reasonably good at it, and then I developed some momentum.
Okay. That's interesting now, because we talk about that you're saying that naturally you think you tried harder at a lot of these things to be a good salesperson. If John McGrath today was talking to John McGrath at age 20, what would you say to him after, you know, the last 20, 25 years of real estate? What would you say to yourself at age 20?
Oh, I guess number one, I'd say you're in for a hell of a ride. This is a great industry. Now that I've sort of, and I'm not at the end of my career, I'm sort of partway through, midway through, I think. I'd like to think anyway. But I'd say this is an industry that has everything you need. It's got financial rewards, it's got social interaction, it's got emotional and intellectual challenges. It's like a game of chess every day. So you're in for a great ride. Two is think big as you can. Because I think one of the problems, and maybe for our audience, you know, have a think about their own lives and what are they expecting of themselves and thinking it's possible. One of the great problems is most people think too small. So they often get into real estate and they say, oh, well, I'm sure I can make it in real estate. What does make it mean? Well, keep a job and make a living. Why not say, I wonder what it would take to be the world's number one real estate salesperson? It's a whole different question. And it sets you up for success because you say, well, you know, here's the time management, here's the presentation, here's the skills that I'm going to need to do all of that. So I would say make sure you think big. Make sure you understand it has very little to do with bricks and mortar and tiles and landscaping. It's got everything to do with people. So develop your people skills. Make sure your integrity is intact all the time. And I think these are things that I did, but if I was actually sort of going back to revisit that, these are things I would say. Here's your to-do list. If you want a laundry list of success, do all these things. And don't hold yourself back. Sometimes I think I've held myself back because I've had some levels of self-doubt. Not huge, but some. Yeah, make sure the handbrake's off all the time. Sometimes, you know, we're driving this incredible vehicle called I'm a human being living in the lucky country, and I'm able-bodied and able-minded, therefore the sky's the limit. Sometimes we have handbrakes on. So just make sure all the handbrakes are off.
Okay. John, this is going out to 15,000 people. I think about 6,000 people will open it up and watch it. Out of that 6,000, there's going to be a few people that are stumbling around writing $200,000 gross commission a year. They're working 40, 50 hours. It's not like they're at the movies or at the beach. They're in the office, but they're writing $200,000 a year. What do you say to that person about step one to turn things around? What do you say to that person that is actually making $80,000 on their group certificate, going from the heights of exhilaration to the depths of depression in 24 hours? What do you say to that person?
Well, what I just said, think bigger. So the first thing is, if you're doing $200,000, and I'm not judging that or being critical of that, because for a lot of people that's a lot better living than they were making a few years ago. What I'm saying is, if you're doing $200,000, ask yourself the question, what will it take for me to do $500,000? So what is it going to take? You're now in a better mindset. So instead of saying, I did 200 last year, hopefully I can do it again this year. You're saying, I did 200 last year, what's it going to take to do 500 next year? Number two is accept responsibility that you did 200 because you did 200 because you were meant to do 200. Had nothing to do with competitors, your boss, your brand, the GFC. It had to do with you had $200,000 a year habits, telephone habits, energy, presentation, connecting skills, listing skills. I would think $200,000 a year in most markets means my listing presentation is at a 5.5, 6 out of 10. Because if your listing presentation was 9 out of 10, you'd be making 5, 6, 7, 800,000 in most communities. My sales and marketing strategy is probably a 6 out of 10 if I'm doing 200,000. Not bad. There's probably worse in the marketplace, but not at the top of the tree either. So then you say, okay, how do I go from a 6 out of 10 listing presentation to a 9? You've got to work at it. You got to say, what would a 9 look like? Let me practice that. Let me get feedback. Let me video it like we're doing today. Let's video it. Let's work it out. Who can I meet that would have a 9 out of 10? What books can I read? What conferences can I attend? What articles can I read to take me to a 9 out of 10? Because I've got to tell you, if you're a 9 out of 10 prospecting strategy, 9 out of 10 listing strategy, 9 out of 10 sales and negotiation strategy, you're earning $2 million, not $200,000. I just got an email a few minutes ago. You know, we're in my office. as you know here, I got an email. One of our guys, who's a young guy, not that experienced enough, just cracked over 500,000 for this month, or month to date, and we've still
got
1 month, 500,000 GCI. And I look at that and I say, you know, well done, that's 1 month. So I'm not saying he's going to do that every month, but he could. But, you know, he might end up doing between 2 and 3 million this year in GCI. He was a guy that, I'd be exaggerating saying he was struggling a couple of years ago, but he was not doing, he probably did 500 in a year. So he's undertaken some things and he's changed himself. And he's one of the best prospectors I know. He's another example of someone that I would say, with total respect to him, in fact, inspirational. I don't think he was a naturally born salesman. He was not naturally gifted. He's worked at it, worked at it, worked at it. He went down the valleys and up the mountains. He went through times where he wondered, was this the right industry? Can I make it? Am I good enough? And he's got to a point now where he's really starting to get amazing traction and momentum. So I just think this is important stuff. If you want a 2X, first make the decision to 2X. Then own the fact that your current results are as they should be. And if you want to double them, you need to make some changes. Work out what the changes are: better prospecting, better listing, better sales negotiation, better time management, and then just go and do them.
Okay. So, John, a 5 out of 10 listing presentation to a 9 out of 10 listing presentation, give me an example of a couple of the things that move you forward in that direction. So what's a 5 out of 10 look like? What's a 9 out of 10 look like at a listing presentation?
So 5 out of 10 is probably what most people, and I say this respectfully, but most people I come across, that's what they're doing. So whatever you're doing, if you're watching this now, unless you're, you know, on 7 figures, you're probably a 5 to a 7 out of 10. So I'll describe sort of what a 9 out of 10 feels like. 9 out of 10 feels like the listing presentation starts a long way before the listing presentation. When you get a call or you identify a potential client that could be wanting to list their property, you're on your game. So you're researching them, you're Googling them, you're getting a pre-listing kit into their hands within 60 minutes or 30 minutes. Chris Gilmore, I was in Adelaide last week and he talked about 30 minutes. So you're doing a lot of stuff. When you arrive at the presentation, clearly, you know, you need to get to know the property and the client. Your connecting skills are as good as any in the game. The questions you ask are questions that are incisive, intelligent, and actually have the client think about things they may not have thought about yet. So I'll give you an example. I mean, one of the things that I recommend people should ask is, tell me about your last real estate experience. How did it go? Sounds like an open-ended, gentle, sort of nothing question, but it will actually get them to describe how they're currently feeling about their next sale mm-hmm. and about the real estate industry. If it was fabulous, well, that's going to be positive and you can understand why, give you some clues. If it was horrendous, you can understand what went wrong and just make sure that you develop a plan that'll make sure that doesn't go wrong again. Another question could be, Tom, you know, when you're choosing an agent, and I know you said you're going to interview 3 or 4, what's most important to you and what do you think is going to be the thing that will help you choose the right agent? A lot of people line up 3 or 4 interviews and they're actually not sure what they're looking for. So I've asked that question before and people have stood and they've said, wow, what a good question. I actually have no idea. I said, so if you were to choose me or someone else today, what do you think are the traits that are going to impress you? And they'd say, well, I guess I want someone that's got a good plan and I want someone that walks the talk and I want someone that's a bit of a specialist in what I have to offer here. And again, you're getting clues as to what's important for the client. So I think have some really good questions. One of the things I talk about in listings is every child gets a prize. So what that means is, whilst I'm at the property, I'm looking for opportunities to recognise, connect with and compliment genuinely and sincerely anyone associated with that. So I'll walk around a house that's been beautifully kept or a garden that's beautifully manicured and I'll see a gardener and I'll give them a compliment. And so I just want to let you know, my name's John and this is beautifully manicured. I love the way you've kept this up. I'll be there with kids and you'll see, you know, how's school going. You have a chat with the kids. You give everyone a bit of attention because everyone is a part of anyone that's sitting in the house or the office that particular time. And if you're in a work environment, it could be the person's PA or a colleague of theirs or something. Everyone is an influencer in a decision. And I've seen agents focus on, call it the vendor, and there's been someone else in the room or thereabouts at the time where they've given them no attention, and I know that's just cost them the business. And I walked out with a couple of my agents. I remember one night it was horrendous. We were there and there was a male vendor and there was a female girlfriend. And the agent made the horrible mistake of not focusing equally on the two. And then I got out and I tried to balance it up, but it was almost too late. And we were in the car and I said, what happened? He said, oh, well, you know, he's a vendor and that's a new girlfriend. He only met her 3 or 4 weeks ago. She's not one of the owners. And I said, it's irrelevant. She is an important person in the process. He wanted her in the room. She'll be now saying, we ain't going to hire that guy. You know, he wasn't he rude? So every child gets a prize. Make sure that everyone involved in the listening presentation gets an appropriate amount of respect and attention. Ask the incisive questions. Don't pitch your services until you understand the client's goals. So I would say, Tom, so just tell me, if in your mind's eye, if everything went well, let's say you put me to work tonight and we had a fabulous result, tell me what that looks like. Over the next month, two, three, what's your time frame? What's the result that you'd like to feel? What's the process you'd like to go through? And Tom will say, well, you know, obviously I want to get the best price and I want to get it sooner than later because I have to move to Melbourne. I've got a new job opportunity. And you give me a range of goals. So then I have the job and the opportunity to convince you that I have the ability to deliver those goals. So then I would say, Tom, let me just run through this. So we've now had it half an hour together. Here's my understanding. Is last time you went to the market, you had a bad experience. You went to auction, no bidders, cost you a lot of money, you were disappointed. I understand that. This time, what you want to do is achieve a result, preferably without huge marketing expenditure, in a 30-day period, and obviously you want the best price. Let me develop a plan and talk you through how I think we can achieve that. So this is now sounding like a trusted advisor that knows his or her stuff and is really got a good grasp of who I am and what I want to achieve, and they're talking me through a plan. As opposed to what a 5 out of 10 sounds like is great. You know, well, Tom, as you know, I've got 45% market share and, you know, like our company's the best in the business and you know, we'll discount our fee. You know, just tell us how much we've got to do. We really want your business. It's this constant salesperson jibber-jabber of talk, promise, no strategy behind it. Just it's almost this loose language. So I say tighten your language up, put some structure into your listing presentation, not so it feels robotic, but so it feels orderly and it's taking you somewhere. So then people feel good and they say, wow, sometimes I don't even know why, but this feels good to me. I feel like you understand me. I feel like you know your stuff. I feel like you've given me a plan. Let's do business. So it's a bit more intense. It's definitely more structured. It's better quality questions. It's not just around good energy and positive, but it's actually got some intelligence behind, and you've got to practice it.
I've got to say, John, it actually feels, just listening to this here on this sofa, it feels so good because it seems like just a really honest, non-agent conversation where you're actually helping the client trying to work out what success looks like, which, as you said, a lot of them don't know.
Yeah.
So you're actually creating the story, finding out, and by the sounds of it, it's very much about the vendor and the vendor's house versus about you and how great you
Correct.
Are. And defining what success looks like, then more or less coming up with a solution that resonates with them because by the sounds of it, you've diagnosed their whole situation. And then coming up with, I mean, just your delivery of that comes across as a caring, empathetic, we use trusted advisor. So I think people just watching that video, if you were to stop it now and maybe jot 3 or 4 notes down, because sometimes you get good ideas and then you just get on with work again and it's not implemented. That was really, really good.